The first time I came in contact with extreme wealth, I was about 15 years old. We had been walking for hours along La Rambla in Barcelona, soaking in the vibrant energy of the city. But our feet began to ache, so we decided to rest when we finally reached Port Vell, a serene harbor where the sky met the sea in a quiet embrace. There, we find a bench. You might have felt this before. That moment when you sit down in a beautiful place and suddenly time slows down. The world breathes with you. The wind gently brushes against your face. Seagulls glide effortlessly above, and the golden afternoon light dances across the rippling water. In that moment, life feels simple, perfect, and you wouldn't trade it for anything. But then something caught my eye. A massive, luxurious yacht docked nearby, its polished surface gleaming under the sun, and in golden letters, it bore a name, Hamilton. Inside, a couple sat at a beautiful set table, dressed in elegant white outfits, sipping wine as if the world belonged to them. I remember thinking that must be the end goal of life, owning a yacht, wearing classy outfits, traveling the world. Years later, Allah granted me another peek at this world of extreme wealth. We were in Cannes, walking past the famous Carlton Hotel. I had never seen anything like it. One incredible car after another. A Lamborghini here, a Bugatti there, an Aston Martin. And it didn't stop. The streets were a parade of jaw-dropping luxury. The people, they didn't just look rich. They felt rich. Their outfits, their posture, their effortless elegance. It was as if they belonged to a different reality. A casino stood nearby, buzzing with energy, flashing lights, and the unmistakable aura of power and privilege. We were too young to enter, but just standing there, taking it all in, I felt something I couldn't quite name. Was this what life was about? Like Phil Knight once said in Shoe Dog, "One day I vowed. One day I shall return." 7 years later, by the grace of God, I found myself in one of the most extravagant, breathtaking cities in the world, Dubai. If Cannes and Barcelona had been a glimpse into wealth, Dubai was wealth in its purest, most unapologetic form. Everywhere I looked, there were signs of opulence, supercars purring on the streets, skyscrapers piercing the heavens, and even private buggies chauffeuring Emiratis inside the Dubai Mall, because walking was too much of an inconvenience. At first I was in awe, but then something shifted. Unlike the quiet luxury of Port Vell, Dubai felt like a relentless pursuit. It was as if no one was ever satisfied. No matter how much they had, they wanted more and more. And more. I didn't want that. Don't get me wrong, Dubai was spectacular. To live there, to be a part of building something so grand, that would be an incredible opportunity. But owning all of it, chasing it endlessly, no. That's when I realized something. Just because you own a yacht, a Bugatti, a penthouse at the Carlton, that doesn't make you wealthy. These things, they are attractive, tempting, yes, but they are not the end goal. Freedom is. The freedom to do what you want when you want. The freedom to buy what you need without worry. To take a vacation without asking permission. The freedom to rest when your body and mind need it. And the freedom to sit on a bench with your loved ones, watching the waves, feeling the wind, and knowing deep in your soul that you are at peace. But here's the paradox. To have that kind of freedom, you need wealth. That's why wealth is not about greed. It's not about chasing more for the sake of more. It's about building a life where you can be the best version of yourself, where you can chase your hero, without worrying about what to eat or where to sleep. as would Naval Ravikant say, what making money will do is solve your money problems. It will remove a set of things that could get in the way of being happy, but it is not going to make you happy. And that's why today, we're diving into a book that many of the world's greatest minds consider one of the best guides to wealth, The Almanac of Naval Ravikant. Again, let's begin. I like to think that if I lost all my money and you dropped me on a random street in any English-speaking country, within 5 or 10 years, I'd be wealthy again. Because it's just a skill set I've developed that anyone can develop. Making money is not a thing you do, it's a skill you learn. It's not really about hard work. You can work in a restaurant 80 hours a week, and you're not going to get rich. Getting rich is about knowing what to do, who to do it with, and when to do it. Yes, hard work matters, and you can't skimp on it, but it has to be directed in the right way. If you don't know yet what you should work on, the most important thing is to figure it out. You should not grind at a lot of hard work until you figure out what you should be working on. The tweet storm below is a good starting point. The tweet storm tries to be information dense, very concise, high impact, and timeless. It has all the information and principles, so if you absorb these and you work hard over 10 years, you'll get what you want, hopefully, for all of us. And you can honestly just listen to the tweetstorm section of this episode, and you'd already have everything you need to start building wealth. It's a complete blueprint, straight to the point, no fluff, just the essential principles to set you and I on the path to financial freedom, hopefully. Okay, how to get rich without getting lucky. Let's go. Seek wealth, not money or status. Wealth is having assets that earn while you sleep. Money is how we transfer time and wealth. Status is your place in the social hierarchy. Understand ethical wealth creation is possible. If you secretly despise wealth, it will elude you. Ignore people playing status game. They gain status by attacking people playing wealth creation games. You're not going to get rich renting out your time. You must own equity, a piece of business, to gain your financial freedom. You will get rich. So as you can see, I'm really just reading the tweet storm or the thread as it is. I'm not really gonna try to comment on it or try to give explanations about it because we're gonna see that afterwards. So let's continue. You will get rich by giving society what it wants but does not yet know how to get at scale. Pick an industry where you can play long-term games with long-term people. The internet has massively broadened the possible space of careers. Most people haven't figured this out yet. Play iterated games. All the returns in life, whether in wealth, relationships, or knowledge, come from compound interest. Pick business partners with high intelligence, energy, and above all, integrity. Don't partner with cynics and pessimists. Their beliefs are self-fulfilling. Learn to sell, learn to build. If you can do both, you will be unstoppable. Arm yourself with specific knowledge, accountability, and leverage. Specific knowledge is knowledge you cannot be trained for. If society can train you, it can train someone else and replace you. Specific knowledge is found by pursuing your genuine curiosity and passion rather than whatever is hot right now. Building specific knowledge will feel like play to you, but will look like work to others. When specific knowledge is taught, it's through apprenticeships, not school. Specific knowledge is often highly technical or creative. It cannot be outsourced or automated. Embrace accountability and take business risks under your own name. Society will reward you with responsibility, equity, and leverage. And here's a quote by Archimedes. Give me a lever long enough and a place to stand, and I will move the earth. Fortunes require leverage. Business leverage comes from capital, people, and products with no marginal cost of replication, like code and media. Capital means money. To raise money, apply your specific knowledge with accountability and show resulting good judgment. Labor means people working for you. It's the oldest and most fought over form of leverage. Labor leverage will impress your parents, but don't waste your life chasing it. Capital and labor are permissioned leverage. Everyone is chasing capital, but someone has to give it to you. Everyone is trying to lead, but someone has to follow you. Code and media are permissionless leverage. They are the leverage behind the newly rich. You can create software and media that works for you while you sleep. An army of robots is freely available. It's just packed in data centers for heat and space efficiency. Use it. If you can't code, write books and blogs, record videos and podcasts. Leverage is a force multiplier for your judgment. Judgment requires experience, but can be built faster by learning foundational skills. There's no skill called business. Avoid business magazines and business classes. Study, and we have covered that in the critical thinking episode, study microeconomics, game theory, psychology, persuasion, ethics, mathematics, and computers. Oh my god, that reminds me that I really need to make time to study those and share that with you. Okay, so reading is faster than listening. Doing is faster than watching. You should be too busy to do coffee while still keeping an uncluttered calendar. Set and enforce an aspirational personal hourly rate. If fixing a problem will save less than your hourly rate, ignore it. If outsourcing a task will cost less than your hourly rate, outsource it. Okay, next one. Work as hard as you can, even though who you work with and what you work on are more important than how hard you work. Become the best in the world at what you do. Keep redefining what you do until this is true. There are no get-rich-quick schemes. Those are just someone else getting rich off you. Apply specific knowledge with leverage, and eventually, you will get what you deserve. When you're finally wealthy, you'll realize it wasn't what you were seeking in the first place. But that is for another day. Summary: productize yourself. So in total, there are about 38 powerful ideas here in this tweet storm. 38 insights that could one day hopefully lead you and I to true wealth. So let's dive deeper, break them down, and truly understand what they mean for us. So in the summary, he says, productize yourself. But what does that actually mean? He says, productize and yourself. Yourself has uniqueness. Productize has leverage. Yourself has accountability. Productize has specific knowledge. Yourself also has specific knowledge in there. So all of these pieces, you can combine them into these two words, productize yourself. If you're looking toward the long-term goal of getting wealthy, you should ask yourself, is this authentic to me? Is it myself that I'm projecting? And then, am I productizing it? Am I scaling it? Am I scaling with labor or with capital or with code or with media? So it's a very handy, simple mnemonic. This is hard. This is why I say it takes decades. I'm not saying it takes decades to execute, but the better part of a decade may be figuring out what you can uniquely provide. And then there's a question. What's the difference between wealth and money? Money is how we transfer wealth. If I do my job right, if I create value for society, society says, oh, thank you. We owe you something in the future for the work you did in the past. Here's a little IOU. Let's call that money. Wealth is the thing you want. Wealth is assets that earn while you sleep. Wealth is the factory, the robots cranking out things. Wealth is the computer program that's running at night serving other customers. So my definition of wealth is much more businesses and assets that can earn while you sleep. And that reminds me of something I read in the anthology of Balaji, A Guide to Technology, Truth, and Building the Future, A book by Eric Jorgensen, the same author behind this book, which is The Almanac of Naval Ravikant. So Balaji says, I look at money as a tool to build things I can't buy today. Elon Musk is building SpaceX because he can't buy a trip to Mars. You can have all the money in the world, but you can't buy a trip to Mars. 100 years ago, the richest man in the world couldn't buy an iPhone. That's the kind of progress I care about. We have to start talking more about our values than our valuations. Money is only a tool. What really matters is building something you can't buy. That's how we actually improve metrics like life expectancy, which used to be the metric of technological progress. Let's go back to Naval. Society will pay you for creating things it wants, but society doesn't yet know how to create those things, because if it did, they wouldn't need you. They would already be stamped out. Almost everything in your house, in your workplace, and on the street used to be technology at one point in time. There was a time when oil was a technology that made G.D. Rockefeller rich. There was a time when cars were technology that made Henry Ford rich. What does Steve Jobs says? Everything around you that you call life was made up by people that were no smarter than you. And you can change it. You can influence it, right? And here are Naval Ravikant's words again. So technology is the set of things, as Alan Kay said. Actually, there's a correction. I think Danny Hillis said that. So technology is the set of things that don't quite work yet. Once something works, it's no longer technology. Society always wants new things. And if you want to be wealthy, you want to figure out which one of those things you can provide for society that it does not yet know how to get, but it will want, and providing it is natural to you, within your skill set and within your capabilities. Then you have to figure out how to scale it, because if you only build one, that's not enough. You've got to build thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions or billions of them so everybody can have one. Okay, so we talked about productizing yourself and about the difference between wealth and money. Let's move on to finding and building specific knowledge, which is a word that, if you noticed, has come up very, very frequently in the tweet storm. So specific knowledge cannot be taught, but it can be learned. When I talk about specific knowledge, I mean figure out what you were doing as a kid or teenager almost effortlessly. Something you didn't even consider a skill, but people around you noticed. Your mother or your best friend growing up would know. Examples of what your specific knowledge could be are sales skills, musical talent, and obsessive personality, love for science fiction, or playing a lot of games. The specific knowledge is sort of this weird combination of unique traits from your DNA, your unique upbringing, and your response to it. It's almost baked into your personality and your identity. Then you can hone it. No one can compete with you on being you. Most of life is a search for who and what needs you the most. Specific knowledge is found much more by pursuing your innate talents, your genuine curiosity, and your passion. And then he says, if you're not 100% into it, somebody else who is 100% into it will outperform you. And they won't just outperform you by a little, they'll outperform you by a lot, because now we're operating the domain of ideas. Compound interest really applies, and leverage really applies. And he gives an example of how you can actually build wealth by using your specific knowledge. You can go on the internet and you can find your audience, and you can build a business and create a product and build wealth and make people happy just uniquely expressing yourself through the internet. If you are fundamentally building and marketing something that is an extension of who you are, no one can compete with you on that. The most important skill for getting rich, and I've already read that in the episode number 3, which is mastering the fundamentals, but it's so good that it needs to be repeated. The most important skill for getting rich is becoming a perpetual learner. You have to know how to learn anything you want to learn. You really care about having studied the foundations, so you're not scared of any book. If you go to the library and there's a book you cannot understand, you have to dig down and say, what is the foundation required for me to learn this? Foundations are super important. Foundations are key. It's much better to be at 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 on foundations than to try and get super deep into things. You do need to be deep in something because otherwise you'll be a mile wide and an inch deep and you won't get what you want out of life. You can only achieve mastery in one or two things. It's usually things you're obsessed about. When you find the right thing to do, when you find the right people to work with, invest deeply. Sticking with it for decades is really how you make the big returns in your relationships and in your money. Again, compound interest, right? So compound interest is very important. He then talks about something very interesting, which is 99% of effort is wasted. Obviously, nothing is ever completely wasted because it's all a learning moment. You can learn from anything. But for example, when you go back to school, 99% of the term papers you did, books you read, exercises you did, things you learned, they don't really apply. Of course, these are learning experiences. You did learn. You learned the value of hard work. You might have learned something that went deep into your psyche and became a piece of what you're doing now. But at least when it comes to the goal-oriented life, only about 1% of the efforts you made paid off. And speaking about how things actually are not wasted, and that you learn from experiences, and that some things actually go deep into your psyche and become a piece of what you're doing now, I've listened yesterday to this episode of Founders Podcast about the producer James Cameron. And his father and brother were engineers. And you can actually see the technical and engineering part in James Cameron's movies, right? So even though most of the things we learn or we encounter are wasted, some of them really get into your psyche and some of them really shape your future in some way and makes you who you are, which is really interesting, right? Anyways, so back to Naval. Another example of this principle of 99% of effort is wasted is all the people you dated until you met your husband or wife. It was wasted time in the goal sense, not wasted in the exponential sense, not wasted in the learning sense, but definitely wasted in the goal sense. I say this because you should be very thoughtful and realize in most things, relationships, work, even in learning, what you're trying to do is find the thing you can go all in on to earn compound interests. And he expands on the example of relationships. When you're dating, the instant you know this relationship is not going to be the one that leads to marriage, you should probably move on. What I'm saying is, when you find the 1% of your discipline which will not be wasted, which you'll be able to invest in for the rest of your life and has meaning to you, go all in and forget about the rest. That reminds me of something Brad Jacobs, the American businessman known for founding and leading multiple billion-dollar companies across various industries, once said. Narrow your focus to your most important dreams and tune out everything else. Okay, so next lesson, take on accountability. Embrace accountability and take business risks under your own name. Society will reward you with responsibility, equity, and leverage. To get rich, you need leverage. Leverage comes in labor, it comes in capital, or it can come through code or media. But most of these, like labor and capital, people have to give to you. For labor, somebody has to follow you. For capital, somebody has to give you money, assets to manage, or machines. So to get these things, you have to build credibility, and you have to do it under your own name as much as possible, which is risky. So accountability is a double-edged thing. It allows you to take credit when things go well and to bear the brunt of the failure when things go badly. Clear accountability is important. Without accountability, you don't have incentives. Without accountability, you can't build credibility, but you take risks. You risk failure. You risk humiliation. You risk failure under your own name. The book then delves into the importance of building or acquiring equity in a business. If you don't own a piece of a business, you don't have a path towards financial freedom. Why is owning equity in a business important to becoming rich? It's ownership versus wage work. If you are paid for renting out your time, even lawyers and doctors, you can make some money, but you're not going to make the money that gives you financial freedom. You're not going to have passive income where a business is earning for you while you are on vacation. This is probably one of the most important points. People seem to think you can create wealth, make money through work. It's probably not going to work. There are many reasons for that. Without ownership, your inputs are very closely tied to your outputs. In almost any salaried job, even one paying a lot per hour like a lawyer or a doctor, you're still putting in the hours, and every hour you get paid. Without ownership, when you're sleeping, you're not earning. When you're retired, you're not earning. When you're on vacation, you're not earning, and you can't earn non-linearly. If you look at even doctors, okay, he's talking too much about doctors. I feel targeted. If you look at even doctors who get rich, like really rich, it's because they open a business. They open a private practice. The private practice builds a brand, and the brand attracts people. Or they build some kind of a medical device, a procedure, or a process with an intellectual property. Essentially, you're working for somebody else, and that person is taking on the risk and has the accountability, the intellectual property, and the brand. They're not going to pay you enough. They're going to pay you the bare minimum they have to get you to do their job. That can be a high bare minimum, but it's still not going to be true wealth, where you're retired but still earning. Owning equity in a company basically means you own the upside. When you own debt, you own guaranteed revenue streams and you own the downside. You want to own equity. If you don't own equity in a business, your odds of making money are very slim. You have to work up to the point where you can own equity in a business. You could own equity as a small shareholder where you bought stock. You could also own it as an owner where you started the company. Ownership is really important. But usually the real wealth is created by starting your own companies or even by investing. In an investment firm, they're buying equity. These are the routes to wealth. It doesn't come through the hours. Okay, so it's important to build or acquire equity in a business. Next is the idea of finding a position of leverage. Following your genuine intellectual curiosity is a better foundation for a career than following whatever is making money right now. And if you've listened to the episode on how to do great work, which is actually episode number 5, you'll notice that Paul Graham echoes the same idea, right? He says, curiosity is the best guide. Your curiosity never lies, and it knows more than you do about what's worth paying attention to. Now back to Naval. Knowledge only you know, or only a small set of people knows, is going to come out of your passions and your hobbies, oddly enough. If you have hobbies around your intellectual curiosity, you're more likely to develop these passions. I only really want to do things for their own sake. That is one definition of art. Whether it's business, exercise, romance, friendship, whatever, I think the meaning of life is to do things for their own sake. Ironically, when you do things for their own sake, you create your best work. Even if you're just trying to make money, you will actually be the most successful. And you can see this pattern everywhere, right? Every successful founder was deeply obsessed with something. Steve Jobs with technology, Edwin Land from Polaroid with light and photography, and Phil Knight from Nike with shoes and running. The list goes on. Actually, as I was editing this episode, I came across a reel from David Senra of Founders Podcast, where he talks about anti-business billionaires and the philosophy behind them. He says, I would say that this anti-business philosophy that James Dyson is the inventor of bagless vacuum technology. So he says, this anti-business philosophy that James Dyson has, it reminds me of Steve Jobs, it reminds me of Yvon Chouinard, and it comes down to the fact that these guys are unbelievably obsessed with the quality of the product that they're making. It reminds me of what Henry Ford said, one of my favorite quotes from the history of entrepreneurship. Money comes naturally as a result of service. If you focus on making an excellent product and you maintain control, you'll wind up with the money anyways. I'll say that again. Money comes naturally as a result of service. If you focus on making an excellent product and you maintain control, you'll wind up with the money anyways. And who says that? Henry Ford, someone who created a company that's been running for 122 years and whose net worth at his peak was about $200 billion, making him one of the wealthiest individuals in history. I mean, wouldn't it make sense to learn from him? Definitely, I really love that. Money comes naturally as a result of service. Okay, now let's circle back to Naval Ravikant, who shares his own experience on how true wealth comes from doing things for their own sake and fully immersing yourself in the work itself. He says, the year I generated the most wealth for myself was actually the year I worked the least hard and cared the least about the future. I was mostly doing things for the sheer fun of it. I was basically telling people, I'm retired, I'm not working. Then I had the time for whatever was my highest valued project in front of me. By doing things for their own sake, I did them at their best. This reminds me of the story of the physician Richard Feynman, who actually, if I'm not mistaken, won the Nobel Prize when he felt like he wasn't working, when he was just interested in a particular phenomenon and tried to learn more about it without really working. That really hits deep, right? It makes me reflect on my own journey, how I'm constantly planning for the future, mapping out every step, yet sometimes forgetting to fully embrace the present, the things I'm curious about right now, the things I really love right now. I mean, the joy of creating, the energy of a great workout, these are the moments that truly matter right now for me. So Naval says, the less you want something, the less you're thinking about it, the less you're obsessing over it, the more you're going to do it in a natural way. The more you're going to do it for yourself. You're going to do it in a way you're good at, and you're going to stick with it. The people around you will see the quality of your work is higher. You're more likely to have skills society does not yet know how to train others people to do. If someone can train other people how to do something, then they can replace you. If they can replace you, then they don't have to pay you a lot. So you want to know how to do something other people don't know how to do at the time period when those skills are in demand. If they can train you to do it, then eventually they will train a computer to do it. He says, you are waiting for your moment when something emerges in the world, they need a skill set, and you're uniquely qualified. You build your brand in the meantime on Twitter, on YouTube, and by giving away free work. You make a name for yourself, and you take some risk in the process. When it is time to move on the opportunity, you can do so with leverage, the maximum leverage possible. And this reminds me of Ali Abdaal. Ali Abdaal is this doctor turned YouTuber, podcaster, and author. So Ali Abdaal started his YouTube channel in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. And he was creating content over and over again, and he started becoming productive. He started learning how to learn. He started building specific knowledge. And when COVID hit in 2020, he was actually ready. He had the opportunity and the leverage, and he was uniquely qualified, this uniquely qualified person with the specific knowledge for productivity, and he managed to build wealth out of it. I mean, that is exactly what Naval is talking about here, right? Let's go back to Naval. If you have specific knowledge, you have accountability, and you have leverage. They have to pay you what you're worth. If they pay you what you're worth, then you can get your time back. You can be hyper-efficient. You're not doing meetings for meeting's sake. You're not trying to impress other people. You're not writing things down to make it look like you did work. All you care about is the actual work itself. Building any product and selling any product fits this description. And fundamentally, what else is there? Where you don't necessarily want to be is a support role, like customer service. In customer service, unfortunately, inputs and outputs relate relatively close to each other, and the hours you put in matter. This reminds me actually of Alex Hormozi. So Alex Hormozi is this great content creator, billionaire, entrepreneur, whatever. So he used to be a fitness coach. And he used to also help gyms acquire new clients. And that was the customer service, right? And that took time. Because as Naval says, in customer service, inputs and outputs relate relatively close to each other. And the hours you put in matter. Alex then switched to selling the technique or the ideas that he used to help the gym get and acquire new customers. And that changed things, right? He wasn't in the customer service anymore, but he was in the code or media type of model. He wasn't actually in the customer service anymore. And he says that that's when he really, really became wealthy. And so, yeah, I mean, there are examples in the real life for everything that Naval Ravikant is telling us here. So this is really, really important. So back to Naval. Tools and leverage create this disconnection between inputs and outputs. The higher the creativity component of a profession, the more likely it is to have disconnected inputs and outputs. This is the example of songwriters or singers or content creators for that matter, right? If it's highly creative, people can't really compete with you on it. If you're looking at professions where your inputs and your outputs are highly connected, it's going to be very hard to create wealth and make wealth for yourself in that process. If you want to be part of a great tech company, and if you remember, Naval defines the technology as anything new that society needs, right? Then you need to be able to sell or build. If you don't do either, learn. Learn to sell, learn to build. If you can do both, you will be unstoppable. You start as a salaried employee, but you want to work your way up to try and get higher leverage, more accountability, and specific knowledge. The combination of those over a long period of time with the magic of compound interest will make you wealthy. The one thing you have to avoid is the risk of ruin. Avoiding ruin means stay out of jail, so don't do anything illegal. Avoiding ruin could also mean you stay out of things that could be physically dangerous or hurt your body. You have to watch your health. And there we go again, we're talking about exercise. If you want to know more about that, go to the episode 8 of this podcast, which is the Four Horsemen of Death. Anyways, he then talks about getting paid for your judgment. He says, I would love to be paid purely for my judgment, not for any work. I want a robot, capital, or a computer to do the work, but I want to be paid for my judgment. I think every human should aspire to be knowledgeable about certain things and being paid for our uniquely knowledge. And that is the case with AI, right? We want to be able to have the judgment and let AI do the rest. Demonstrated judgment, which is the credibility around the judgment, is so critical. Warren Buffett wins here because he has massive credibility. He's been highly accountable. He's been right over and over in the public domain. He's built a reputation for very high integrity, so you can trust him. People will throw infinite leverage behind him because of his judgment. Nobody asks him how hard he works. Nobody asks him when he wakes up or when he goes to sleep. They're like, Warren, just do your thing. We waste our time with short-term thinking and busy work. Warren Buffett spends a year deciding and a day acting. That act lasts decades. Okay, so next lesson, prioritize and focus. Value your time at an hourly rate and ruthlessly spend to save time at that rate. You will never be worth more than you think you're worth. This is such a beautiful quote, and it could actually be used in any aspect of life, right? So he says, you will never be worth more than you think you're worth. No one is going to value you more than you value yourself. You just have to set a very high personal hourly rate, and you have to stick to it. Even when I was young, I just decided I was worth a lot more than the market thought I was worth, and I started treating myself that way. Always factor your time into every decision. How much time does it take? It's going to take you an hour to get across town to get something. If you value yourself at $100 an hour, that's basically throwing $100 out of your pocket. Are you going to do that? Fast forward to your wealthy self and pick some intermediate hourly rate. For Naval Ravikant, when he was very young, the hourly rate was about $5,000. Another way of thinking about something is if you can outsource something or not do something for less than your hourly rate, outsource it or don't do it. If you can hire someone to do it for less than your hourly rate, hire them. That even includes things like cooking. Then Naval explains the statement, if you secretly despise wealth, it will elude you. If you get into a relative mindset, you're always going to hate people who do better than you. You're always going to be jealous or envious of them. They'll sense those feelings when you try and do business with them. When you try and do business with somebody, if you have any bad thoughts or any judgments about them, they will feel it. Humans are wired to feel what the other person deep down inside feels. You have to get out of a relative mindset. There are fundamentally two huge games in life that people play. One is the money game. But at the same time, many of those people deep down believe they can't make money. They don't want any wealth creation to happen. So they attack the whole enterprise by saying, well, making money is evil. You shouldn't do it. But they're actually playing the other game, which is the status game. They're trying to be high status in the eyes of other people watching by saying, well, I don't need money. We don't want money. Status is your ranking in the social hierarchy. Status is a zero-sum game. The problem is, to win at a status game, you have to put somebody else down. That's why you should avoid status game in your life. They make you into an angry, combative person. You're always fighting to put other people down, to put yourself and the people you like up. Okay, so in other words, money game is better than status game. The book then tackles another question. What is the most important thing to do for younger people starting out? And here's Naval's take on it. Spend more time making the big decisions. There are basically three really big decisions you make in your early life. Where you live, who you're with, and what you do. If you're going to live in a city for 10 years, if you're going to be in a job for 5 years, if you're in a relationship for a decade, You should be spending 1 to 2 years deciding these things. These are highly dominating decisions. Those three decisions really matter. You have to say no to everything and free up your time so you can solve the important problems. Those three are probably the three biggest ones. So to repeat them, these are where you live, who you're with, and what you do. And here's another thought-provoking question. What are one or two steps you take to surround yourself with successful people? And Naval says, figure out what you're good at and start helping other people with it. Give it away. Pay it forward. Karma works because people are consistent. On a long enough time scale, you will attract what you project. But don't measure. Your patience will run out if you count. Okay, next lesson is to find work that feels like play. I learned how to make money because it was a necessity. After it stopped being a necessity, I stopped caring about it. At least for me, work was a means to an end. Making money was a means to an end. I'm much more interested in solving problems than I am in making money. What you really want is freedom. You want freedom from your money problems, right? I think that's okay. Once you can solve your money problems, either by lowering your lifestyle or by making enough money, you want to retire. Not retirement at 65 years old, sitting in a nursing home collecting a check retirement. It's a different definition. Retirement is when you stop sacrificing today for an imaginary tomorrow. When today is complete in and of itself, you're retired. One way to get there is to have so much money saved that your passive income, without you lifting a finger, covers your burn rate. A second is you just drive your burn rate down to zero. You become a monk. A third is you're doing something you love. You enjoy it so much, it's not about the money. So there are multiple ways to retirement. Okay, next idea is about how to get lucky. The first kind of luck is blind luck, where one just gets lucky because something completely out of their control happened. This includes fortune, fate, etc. Then there's luck through persistence, hard work, hustle, and motion. This is when you're running around creating opportunities. A third way is you become very good at spotting luck. If you are very skilled in a field, you will notice when a lucky break happens in your field and other people who aren't attuned to it won't notice. So you become sensitive to luck. And the last kind of luck is the weirdest, hardest kind where you build a unique character, a unique brand, a unique mindset, which causes luck to find you. To get rich without getting lucky, we want to be deterministic. We don't want to leave it to chance. It starts becoming so deterministic, it stops being luck. The definition starts fading from luck to destiny. And to summarize or to reiterate the fourth type, well, the fourth type is about building your character in a certain way, then your character becomes your destiny. One of the things I think is important to make money is having a reputation that makes people do deals through you. If you are a trusted, reliable, high-integrity, long-term thinking deal maker, when other people want to do deals but don't know how to do them in a trustworthy manner with strangers, they will literally approach you and give you a cut of the deal just because of the integrity and reputation you've built up. Then he talks about networking. I think business networking is a complete waste of time. If you're building something interesting, you will always have more people who will want to know you. Trying to build business relationships while in advance of doing business is a complete waste of time. I have a much more comfortable philosophy. Be a maker who makes something interesting people want. Show your craft, practice your craft, and the right people will eventually find you. And this reminds me so much of Paul Graham's essay, How to Do Great Work, that we've covered in episode 5 of Chasing My Hero. I mean, literally, it's just about trying to find something you're curious about and doing it over and over again and trying to expose yourself to people and trying to share your knowledge with people. And the right people will come to you. Wealth will come to you. It's like the law of attraction. Okay, so the final lesson is about being patient. One thing I figure out later in life is generally, at least in the tech business in Silicon Valley, great people have great outcomes. You just have to be patient. Every person I met at the beginning of my career 20 years ago where I looked at them and said, wow, that guy or girl is super capable, so smart and dedicated. All of them, almost without exception, became extremely successful. You just had to give them a long enough time scale. It never happens in the time scale you want or they want, but it does happen. It takes time, even once you have all of these pieces in place. There is an undeterminate amount of time you have to put in. If you're counting, you'll run out of patience before success actually arrives. You have to enjoy it and keep doing it. Keep doing it and keep doing it. And I'm not repeating myself here. This is exactly what Naval wrote. Don't keep track and don't keep count, because if you do, you will run out of time. The most common bad advice I hear is, you're too young. Most of history was built by young people. They just got credit when they were older. The only way to truly learn something is by doing it. Yes, listen to guidance, but don't wait. This is not to say it's easy. It's not easy. It's actually really freaking hard. It is the hardest thing you will do, but it's also rewarding. Your real resume is just a catalog of all your suffering. If I ask you to describe your real life to yourself, and you look back from your deathbed at the interesting things you've done, it's all going to be around the sacrifices you made, the hard things you did. You have to do hard things anyway to create your own meaning in life. Making money is a fine thing to choose. Money buys you freedom in the material world. It's not going to make you happy. It's not going to solve your health problems. It's not going to make your family great. It's not going to make you fit. It's not going to make you calm. But it will solve a lot of external problems. It's a reasonable step to go ahead and make money. What making money will do is solve your money problems. I think this is the perfect way to wrap up this episode. I truly hope you enjoyed it as much as I loved crafting it. And I hope that one day, in the near future, we'll stand together, not just financially independent, but truly free. Free to live on our own terms, to give back, to uplift others and help them, and to leave the world better than we found it. And may we never lose ourselves in the pursuit of wealth, forgetting the moments, the people, and the purpose that make life truly worth living. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast or YouTube channel, I'd really appreciate it if you did. Your support goes a long way in motivating me to keep chasing my hero and sharing this journey with you. You guys don't know how hard this episode was to record because I'm fasting Ramadan and it's really difficult to keep talking for an hour or so and not drink anything. I mean, I feel like my voice is cracky right now, but I really, really enjoyed making this episode. And for all of you fasting Ramadan, I wish you a great Ramadan. Thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, take care and keep chasing your hero.